Hello, everybody, and welcome to the American Ninja Warrior Recap Podcast for RHAP. We are recapping the Atlanta Finals, Episode 7 of American Ninja Warrior. I am your host, Taryn Armstrong, and I am here with the amazing Lita, who has changed her Twitter handle finally.
Yes, finally. We're doing this at the top of the show. Yeah, Taryn kept bullying me about my Twitter handle. So should I say it now, or do we do that with the administrative stuff?
I mean, you're only allowed to say it at the end, but we'll make an exception just this once.
Okay, well, you should follow me. It's at Lita Tweeted, L-I-T-A Tweeted. Lita Tweets, Lita Tweet, and Tweet Lita were all taken.
Well, this does make it seem a little bit like all your tweets were past tense.
So. Yeah, and I have died or something.
Yeah, you used to tweet, and now you no longer do.
Yeah, well, I don't know what the point of having a weird name is if every Twitter handle is taken.
Hey, if Taryn Armstrong is taken, then everything's got to be taken, right?
Yeah, I was hoping that I would take Taryn Armstrong just to make you mad. No, but apparently the other people in the world who are named Lita are really on top of the Twitter thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's only been out for like a decade or so. So
yeah, I've only been on since 2009 and had that time to get it. But yes, Lita tweeted.
All right, there you go. So, what have you been up to since we last talked?
Since you and I last talked?
Well, since we last talked on the podcast, we hung out. That's what happened.
Yeah, we did. I went to Boston. I had a fantastic time. I had the honor of guesting on the Orange Is the New Black podcast over on Post Show Recaps. So if you like Orange Is the New Black, or you like me, you should check that out. It should be coming out this week. Yeah, Boston was amazing, except for the evening that I had to hang out with this guy that I do a podcast with. No, I had a great time with you, Taryn. I feel like I learned so much more about the man behind the mic, talking about everything and anything.
Anyway, getting into our episode, this is the Atlanta Finals. I think the last Atlanta episode was kind of a slow one. Obviously, Drew Dreschel is amazing, as is James McGrath, but I don't remember liking it in particular. But excited to see the finals episodes. The finals episodes are usually better than the qualifying ones, so I was a little bit excited for this. Some new obstacles were added, and some old ones had some added difficulty. We had the floating steps as usual, but the Big Dipper no longer has a net at the end. So you had to ride that bar down, that sloped track, and then fling yourself all the way to the platform with no net to help you out. Then on the block run, where you run across those blocks that spin, there were four of them instead of five. And then the spin cycle as usual. And then the pipe fitter, the pipes no longer move. So what the athletes were doing in the last episode were they were taking those pipes in the middle that they grab onto and moving them over and then using momentum to swing themselves all the way across so that they didn't have to use their arms to shimmy across. And they changed it so they weren't allowed to do that. They put like stiff pipes around the chains so that they would only move just a tiny little bit right at the end, making it much more difficult. Then we have warped wall as usual, and then the salmon ladder, where you use that bar, you go up those rungs four times, same as always. Then we've got the floating monkey bars, where you grab onto these bars that you can take out of the little holster kind of thing, and then swing them across, and then land them in the next one, and then so on and so forth until you get to the end. Then we had the new obstacle, the clacker. This one was very strange. You had these little like levers. And you had to move your arms and push the lever up and over for each one. And then in the middle, it was even more difficult. You just had to go across and move your arms horizontally both times. And then again, forward to the end. What did you think of the clacker?
I could take or leave the clacker. It is a good obstacle to test what they're trying to test. It looks really hard in terms of upper body strength. It was just kind of hard to see what was going on. It didn't translate that well to television. The first time someone was going through it, I couldn't even really tell what they were doing or how well they were doing. So not my favorite, but overall, I actually really like this course. I think this was probably my favorite course in qualifying because I really like the Big Dipper and also the spin cycle. And that continued here because I thought the floating monkey bars was a really good obstacle. And this is one of those courses where there wasn't one thing that took every single person out. There was a huge range of obstacles that took people out. People even went out on the warped wall, as well as some of the really early obstacles like the Big Dipper. So I really liked that about this course.
Yeah, you know, I liked the clacker, actually. I thought that I liked that you were easily able to tell how much juice an athlete had left in them, basically. Like, if they were just pumping them out, then you're like, oh, wow, they have a lot of strength left. But a lot of them got there and they were just like, oh, like really struggling through. And I like obstacles where you can continue to struggle until the very, very last bit of juice you have just drains out of your body. And that's when you're able to do that. It's not like so impossible that you can't even get the first thing done, right?
Yeah, this was no Rolling Thunder.
Yeah, exactly. I liked the clacker. It's one of those concepts that's like, it's simple enough, while being difficult. So yeah, I was a fan of the clacker. And then obviously we finish it off with the invisible ladder, as always. And, as always, very, very difficult obstacle. Overall, I was a fan of this course. It was just hard enough that most people didn't finish, but it wasn't so impossible that there was like one obstacle that we were looking out for of like, oh man, this is the dangerous one. It was just a matter of like, are they going to get through these obstacles efficiently enough to have enough juice at the end to finish? And I think that's when you know that the course is done well, when it's really just a matter of like, do they have the endurance and the skill to get through this?
Yeah, I like it better there's almost always an obstacle that's like, if you get here, you'll probably qualify rather than if you finish. So last week it was the second to last obstacle before the invisible ladder, so the third to last obstacle. This time it was the second to last obstacle, which I think is better. I think the obstacle that you have to reach to qualify should be as close to the end as possible.
Yeah.
Without it being so easy that everybody gets to the invisible ladder. So I thought this was a good ratio for that. Whereas last week we only saw the third obstacle, the second to last obstacle, we only saw it like three times.
Yeah, I completely agree. So first up, we have Eddie Stewart, the 33-year-old firefighter. And as Akbar comments, that's a swole ninja right there.
Yeah, he looks like he walked off of a fireman calendar. Do you have that calendar? What month is he?
I wish I had that calendar.
Yeah.
He should have been advertising it.
Yeah, the hosts were a lot more enamored with this person than I was. I find those peck things really disturbing. The peck
right?
bounces.
It's really strange.
It's very unsettling. I don't find that attractive.
I'm not going to lie. As he was doing them, I was like, I tried to do it. Can't do it.
Oh.
I don't understand it. It's very strange.
Well,
I'm sorry for everyone that's listening.
Because Taryn's doing it right now and you can't see.
I thought he was really good on the Big Dipper. He really flew through it. And I think when he landed, it was either on the Big Dipper or on block run. Akbar says, oh, right in the obliques.
Sure. I think he also hit his head after the block run, I think.
Maybe that was it.
He seemed very disoriented, but your obliques are not in your head, so I don't know what Akbar
was. Where are
about.
Your obliques? Because that's not a common muscle that I see referenced.
Your obliques are like along your ribs, like your muscles on the side of your torso.
So now I know what Akbar was talking about a day later. So he hesitates a lot on the spin cycle, loses all of his momentum, is unable to regain it, and he goes down into the water.
Yeah, he just seemed really dazed. I thought that he was injured. But classic first run where we just want to see the first few obstacles.
And as we mentioned, he shows off those pec flexes.
Christine seems into it.
Christine, yeah, she was very into it. So, you know, kudos to her, I guess. Next up was Joey Green, the 27-year-old military defense contractor. He had a package about his nephew, who had been placed in foster care, and he spent years, becoming a foster parent for him, and basically raised him on his own. And I thought that was a sweet story.
Yeah. We didn't get a ton of, touching stories tonight. This was really nice. He has very kind eyes, which I think contributed to this. But yeah, foster care is a really overlooked issue. And I didn't know that you had to work that hard to become a foster parent for someone who's already related to you. So that was a really nice story to see.
Yeah, definitely. It's another one of these stories where he had this foster child, who is his nephew, and he's like, he looks at him more as like a son. And they talked about like, they watched the show and he was like, oh, you'd be so good on that. And he wanted to sort of live up to that idea, and prove that he could do it. And, totally did, you know, he does very well here, you know, for a rookie. I think he's a rookie.
Yeah, I believe so. He was the slowest finisher in qualifying, but he did finish.
Yeah. Doesn't place last on this one. He makes it all the way to the warped wall. But on the way, I got a lot of good Akbar quotes.
I got one.
So on the Big Dipper, he lands and Akbar goes, oh, right on his butt, right on his hiney hine hine.
Right. Like, you know, the three little pigs.
Yeah.
That's the correct body part, right?
At one point he said, that boy mean, Matt.
Okay. Because Mean Joe Green.
Yep. And he said, Mean Joe Green. That was his name for Akbar. So, yeah, he was able to, he really, really, showed a gutsy performance on that pipe fitter. It really looked like he wasn't going to be able to make it, but he was holding on just with like his hands. Like most people use their whole arms to like lock it in, but he was just holding on by his hands by the end and still barely managed to make it through. I was really pulling for him when he got to the warped wall because that was such a gutsy performance, but he was just so gassed that he couldn't get up it.
Yeah. I feel like you don't see, many times where people are just so exhausted that they can't get up the warped wall. I feel like people who fail on the warped wall usually don't know the technique, or just haven't mastered it, or keep making mistakes or something. But I mean, we know that this guy can do this. He got up the warped wall in qualifying and it's not any different in this course. So he was just really too exhausted to do it. And that is really disappointing to see, but still a strong performance.
Yeah. This is actually another aspect of this course being really well made, I think, is that the pipe fitter, when it's made to be more difficult, it is very, very exhausting. And that's exactly what an obstacle that's right before the warped wall needs to be, because the warped wall tends to be pretty easy to anybody that's practiced it. The thing that should make it difficult is being exhausted and not having the energy to get up. And we saw multiple times people struggling with the warped wall because they were so exhausted from the pipe fitter. And I think that's an indicator of a well-made course.
Yeah, and Matt Eisman's commentary on the pipe fitter, he was really, really focused on how efficiently people were doing this, because he knew that how efficiently you do the pipe fitter, I keep wanting to call it the pipe cleaner, how efficiently you do the pipe fitter is going to be a huge indicator of how far you're going to go on this course.
Definitely. Next up, we have our first montage. We had Bobby Bohannon, who failed at the Big Dipper, as I think a fair amount of athletes will, because this is a difficult obstacle. It's so temperamental. Just one tiny mistake and you're done. And without the cargo net to save you for like just the smallest mistake, it's even more, more harsh, I guess, to get through. Then was Chris Moore, who failed at the pipe fitter on his first go around and failed at the pipe fitter again this second time.
Yeah, I'm glad that we didn't do that thing where they build up for redemption on an obstacle and then it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So I was fine with him being montaged.
Next up is Brent Ruffin, the 26-year-old NBA entertainer, calls himself the Redneck Ninja. And I am sure that this is your favorite athlete of the night.
Yeah, I love guns and fishing and all of those types of things. Brent Ruffin and I do have something in common, though. We have both performed at NBA games.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say you both mime archery a lot.
I mime it because, you know, I can't do the real thing because it's dangerous. But no, yeah, that is something. I had never even heard of the Memphis Grizzlies. I don't really care about basketball, but I have performed at a Pistons game. So we are really kindred spirits. It's the only thing that matters.
So what were you performing? What was this performance?
My dance team performed at a Detroit Pistons game.
Okay, there you go. Time. Was it like a halftime thing?
No, it was before the game. They have performances to, like, you know, get the crowd hype right before the athletes run out.
Pump everyone up. See, we learn something new every day about Lita.
Yeah, you can call me the redneck dancer. Please don't call me that. That would be wildly inaccurate.
Hashtag redneck dancer for Lita for this episode, please, everybody.
Yeah, his shirt appears to depict a man punching a deer. So that's... Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it's like the silhouette of a guy with his fist extended like an inch from it, for, you know, right in front of the deer's face.
That reminds me of a series of, I think, Japanese films that were called like Karate Bullfighter and Karate Bear Fighter. And they were just awesome. It was literally exactly what the title describes. And everybody should check those out. I saw them when I was a kid and I completely forgot about them until this very moment. So thank you for reminding me of that. I did not notice that he had a shirt with a person punching a deer.
Yeah. So I don't think that we would be friends in real life.
Yeah, so this guy, he spends a lot of time on the spin cycle, which is never a good sign. It's gonna wear your arms out a lot. Right after the spin cycle, pulls out a toothpick, sticks it in his mouth, and as they mentioned, this seems incredibly dangerous. I don't want a toothpick anywhere near any mouths when you're running this course.
Yeah, does this bother you as much as people chewing gum?
More so.
Wow.
Yeah. And we'll get to the gum.
Yeah, where is he keeping that? I mean,
maybe it was in his mouth the whole time. Who knows?
That could have been really, really bad. But he probably knows what he's doing.
So, yeah, he gets all the way to the end of the pipe fitter. But he's dead tired. Akbarvin says he's loving that last pipe. Yeah.
And he stops to pull up his pants, which I feel like may have wasted. It sounds like I'm joking, but I feel like that actually did make him waste some energy because he's holding on with one arm to pull up his pants, and then when he gets both arms back around and tries to dismount, he falls.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't even need to. His boxers are fine.
Yeah.
But yes, he falls right at the last second when he's trying to dismount. Unfortunate end for your favorite athlete.
Yeah, I'm devastated.
Next up is Chad Hone, the 32-year-old general contractor. This is the guy who hit his head on the rolling log last year in Orlando and finished the course with blood streaming down his face. Clearly a very determined guy. Another one of these people who who's buddies with Jeff Britton, trains with Jeff Britton. So I expect great things.
I thought the exact same thing. I thought he trains with Jeff Britton. That's the number one tip that we give ninjas. We say keep your L's and train with Jeff Britton and have a cool t-shirt and don't chew gum.
And he's built obstacles. He's practiced on them. I mean,
yeah,
on paper.
He's one of those people that has, you know, the ninja blank nickname. So he's the ninja builder.
There you go. He does pretty well, somewhat slow through the spin cycle, but he manages to get through it. It goes very quickly through the pipe fitter. I had a lot of hopes for this guy, but he fails on the first rung of the salmon ladder. Just a small little slip up. His left side goes up a little too high and hits the next rung up. And so he's not able to get any purchase and he just goes straight down. And oh man, devastating watching him walk back in tears, knowing that he just had a small mental mistake and now he's not qualifying for Vegas.
Yeah, he is stunned. I mean, this was a really sudden exit. And you know, he's as shocked as anyone watching, because he's probably done this a million times. The salmon ladder is such a classic obstacle. It's such a standard obstacle that anybody who builds obstacles, I'm sure, has one. So it's so much harder when you go out on something that you know you can do, and that he could do if he had another try, he definitely would have done it. So.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate way to go out. And like I said, I think the mental mistake ones where it's just a small little slip up, those are the worst ways to go. You know, it's much easier to take it when you just totally exhausted your body and you have nothing left in you. But when you feel like you still had something left, you were still capable of taking these things on, you just slipped up just a tiny bit. It must be devastating. Your entire year is done at this point. So, yeah, unfortunate for Chad.
Yeah, and that's something that I often worry about with people who have these backyard courses. They historically do really well, but I always do get concerned about mentally checking out on these obstacles that you feel so comfortable with. You can never go into autopilot on the course. And I don't know if that's what happened, but it's always a concern.
Yes. So next up was Tyler Martin, the 21-year-old gymnastics coach. This guy, he's trained in parkour since he was 14. And I believe this is the guy whose mother had recently passed away.
His mother died when he was 12.
Had not recently passed away. Had passed away when he was 12.
It sort of prompted him to get into parkour. But I can see why you would think that, because he does say, like, talk about his mother motivating him and thinking about her watching over him. And, you know, he says that she wouldn't be completely proud of him yet. He needs to go even further.
Yeah. And this guy, he clearly could tell that he has been training in with parkour since he was 14, because very impressive watching him on the course. Very, very built, had great control in the spin cycle. Just really flies through this course for the most part. Screaming on his way through the pipe fitter.
Which I thought
was pretty crazy.
Something he talked about in his package was that he had dealt with these anger issues for a long time, and it kind of never really went anywhere. There wasn't any resolution to that. I think it was just supposed to explain that, you know, he does athletics to deal with that, and that's why he screams so much on the course, because last year, or at qualifying, when he got to the top of the warped wall, he was just like screaming, just like shouting for a full minute. So you'll hear a lot of those types of noises on his runs.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely interesting hearing that anger issue thing. And you could sort of see, maybe he's got a lot of energy, this guy.
Yeah. Extremely good looking. Worth noting.
There you go.
5'8" and just like completely pure lean muscle. This is like what I imagine the ideal body for this course is, you know, tall enough, but not a ton of weight to carry.
Yeah. By the top of the salmon ladder, you can tell he is struggling a lot. He's really running out of grip strength, but he does manage to get onto the floating monkey bars. Unfortunately, though, is not able to make that first transition. He misses the like holding thing for the bar, and he goes down into the water.
Yeah, I really hope we see him again, though. I feel like he has a ton of potential.
Well, he does manage to qualify. Getting this far. So, yeah, we will see him in Vegas.
Oh, well, good. That's exactly what I meant. I mean, I hope he doesn't get injured or sick before Vegas so that we see him again.
Hopefully. Next up is our second montage. First was Jeff Harvey, who apparently had a lot of close calls, but then goes out on the salmon ladder. And then Todd Bourgeois, who saved his shoe on the Big Dipper, a pretty impressive move, but then loses the bar on the floating monkey bars. Like, wow, that's an unfortunate scenario.
Yeah, what did he try to do, though? He still, like, tried to go to the platform, but I don't know what he was going for. Like, maybe, if you don't have the bar, what can you do?
Maybe he just wanted to, like, hop them.
Like, just grab onto them. Like, I don't think you're allowed to do that. I think that the bar should be like the salmon ladder bar, where it's like on wires, so if it drops, it doesn't go into the water. You know,
I think it's fine. Like, if it was only one guy that dropped it, and if you drop it, then, you know, it's your bad,
I guess. I don't feel like you should be penalized for
even if it was on wires, like, what is he gonna do if it drops and then it doesn't go all the way into the water? Like, pull it back up?
Sure. I don't know. Grab it with your foot. Whatever. I just thought this was like a stupid way to go out. But
well, it was a stupid way to go out. But again, he does manage to qualify for Vegas. So despite losing the bar, he's still in a good position.
Yeah. Okay.
Next up is Lucas Gomez, the 22-year-old worship leader. He's the first of our Brazzi Bros. In their package, he says he's the more athletic one. The other one is the more good looking one. But honestly, I think it's kind of flipped.
Completely, yeah. Flipped. I have that written down as well, that Lucas is much better looking and Alexio is like statistically better at this course.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you need to have better self-awareness here.
Yeah, they're called the Brazzi Bros, which I just learned last night, like I've been watching these guys since, you know, last year or whatever, is not their last name. That's because they're from Brazil. They're the Gomez brothers, which I kept hearing as Jonas brothers. So a lot of misunderstanding from my end. They indicate that Lucas is married, which to me, he looks like he's 17.
I was shocked.
Yeah. Stunned.
I literally wrote, he has a wife? Question mark.
Yeah. I don't know what that's about. I have no idea how old they are, but they look like teenagers to me.
Well, he's 22. So yeah, very young for a wife, I guess. Scary. But you know, each to their own.
Yeah. Unlike some other people that we'll see later, his wife being married did not help him qualify.
No, he does. He flings himself right off the spin cycle, but gets all the way to the monkey bars, but misses twice on the first one, then twice again on the second one, and goes down. He kept holding the bar crooked when he was trying to land those bars in their little holsters, and unfortunately just doesn't get there fast enough to qualify. So Lucas Gomez out.
Yeah.
Does not qualify for Vegas.
This is when I decided that I really like the floating monkey bars because it's really about dexterity. Like if you get it in the first go, you can do this obstacle in like 2 seconds. You can do it like normal monkey bars if you're really patient and really good at placing that thing. But if you miss, the more times you miss, obviously it gets exponentially and exponentially harder. So I like that. I thought that it was kind of unique. It encouraged a lot of patience, like don't do it on the swing, like maybe take some time to just totally steady your body and then place it. So I thought it was a unique obstacle, and poor Lucas, because he has to wait until the very end to see if he qualifies.
Yeah, that's sad. A rough one.
Yeah, I like him. We've established I like when people wear glasses on the course, but I don't like when people wear backwards caps. So I don't know about this one, but I like him a lot.
Yeah, I like what you mentioned about the monkey bars. I was waiting the entire time on the floating monkey bars for somebody to make it through without missing once. And because I thought, you know, that'll be impressive to see if anybody manages that. Mm-hmm. So be on the lookout as we go through these athletes. Next up was Casey Suhaki, the 24-year-old engineering student. This guy, he did very well last time. He's the guy with his grandfather who, like, sweet guy. He wanted to, you know, run for his grandfather. And also, this is the guy that was chewing the gum last time. And you didn't believe me. You didn't see it last time.
It's not that I didn't believe you. I just didn't see it. I didn't call you a liar.
I was the boy crying wolf, but there was a wolf. He was chewing gum, and they're pointing it out at this time. What is he doing chewing gum here?
I don't know. This does not bother me nearly as much as it bothers you, I have to admit. I knew that this guy was going to qualify, right? Because I knew that he was going to do really well because this is the exact same package that we saw in qualifying. Like, and it's not even anything it's sweet, but it's not like some huge story. It's just like he loves his grandpa and his grandpa is like cute, which is fine. I just don't know why we needed to see this twice. So obviously I knew he was going to do really well.
Yes, and he looks very strong through that whole first half. Makes it to the monkey bars, and Akbar says, "This ain't your grandfather's monkey bars."
Sure, because you know how grandfathers are always on monkey bars.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a cliche at this point. Grandfathers swinging along the monkey bars.
So he's the first person to do what I was talking about, where he takes a lot of time between rungs to totally stabilize his body, and he does it almost perfectly. He doesn't go right across like you were talking about, but he misses very few and doesn't really struggle to get it into the slot.
Yes, he clearly has very good coordination, so he was able to get through those pretty quickly. But he does struggle through the clacker, gets to the middle section, which seems to be the hardest one, and just can't get that big middle lever all the way over, and goes down into the water, but definitely far enough to qualify at this point.
Yes. And Christine really wants to see his grandfather compete next year.
Yeah.
Christine, and it's like very pushy
Christine
about it.
Christine was like bullying his grandfather to like, promise me She's you're like, going to run this course.
Yeah. It's like, you can't treat your contestant's grandfather like he's Danica Patrick. Just bully into being on your show.
I won't. Yeah. Next is the montage. Our next montage first was Danny Adair, and he's a chef who washed out at the Big Dipper and was thrown out of his own kitchen, so Akbar says.
Okay.
Yeah. Then Jonathan Ruiz, who spun out at the spin cycle, which I'm pretty sure they've used before.
Yeah. Does Jonathan Ruiz have like a super boring job, so Akbar couldn't relate it to his career?
I didn't write it down. I thought it was so boring that I didn't even write it down.
Yeah, exactly. So he must, you know, maybe they didn't even mention his job. Maybe he's unemployed.
Then we have Travis Rosen. I love Travis Rosen. The 41-year-old stock trader, had a whole package about his family. That's kind of the go-to for Travis Rosen. It's his family and his age, really. But this is the first time he has his whole family there to watch him and cheer him on. And he says he feels boosted by that.
Yeah, this was fine. This wasn't, you know, a super exciting package, but I was just happy to see him not get montaged, because I love him. And, you know, it's fine for no one in your family to have a disease.
Yeah.
And have your package be about that. So yeah, this, I mean, really great to see him. He seems to have injured like every bone in his body at some point. They keep saying he had like a shoulder injury and he had a maybe a knee injury or something, but he's coming off of a lot of different injuries, but you would not be able to tell.
Yeah. And he has made it to Vegas all six times that he's competed on American Ninja Warriors. High expectations for Travis Rosen, and he is flawless on the Big Dipper. Like the most perfect I've seen on the Big Dipper, just like the way that he controls his body and swings himself over, like he doesn't even break a sweat. He has great body control throughout the entire thing. He's the fastest up the wall to this point in the competition, and gets, you know, goes straight up the salmon ladder, all the way through the monkey bars. He bangs his arm a little when he does the dismount on the monkey bars, which I was concerned about because he had huge bruises on his arms as I noticed when he was doing the clacker. They were like, his arms were just like red and like terrible looking.
Oh, I did not notice that.
Yeah, I think it was from the pipe fitter, because that's where it hits on your arms. But I was concerned that maybe, because I only saw one of them at first, I thought maybe he had like really hit it hard on the monkey bars, but I'm pretty sure it was from the pipe fitter.
Yeah, I found myself wondering what the pipe fitter is made out of, because that looks so uncomfortable.
Oh, I can imagine.
To go across that, it looks like it's like cement or something. I don't know how more people don't get scraped up on that. So I'm glad you pointed that out.
It looks kind of like those foam rollers. So I think it might be like maybe made out of like foam or something. I don't know. Maybe something a little harder. But yeah, it must be really rough on your forearms, to go across them like that.
Yeah. He also does something at, the spin cycle that we see only the super elite people do. We see him, James McGrath and Drew Dreschel do the thing where instead of swinging with one arm, between the spin cycle things, he jumps and does a two hand grab.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is probably not a great strategy if you're kind of new to this, but gets you through faster. If the spin cycle is child's play, like it is for some of these people.
Right. Yeah. And so he gets to the clacker and, really starts struggling at this point. He gets to that middle part that nobody's gotten past up to this point and, fails three times. And you're just like, okay, he must be done at this point, but he manages to get it over on his fourth try and get all the way across and finish the obstacle, which was just so impressive. And then he's got to do the invisible ladder. And I was thinking myself, like, he's not going to get up this. You know, he was so spent on the clacker. His arms look terrible. There's no way he's going to get all the way up.
And he's never attempted the invisible ladder.
Yeah. And so, like, I really, really was not expecting him to make it up there. But he does. He gets all the way up the invisible ladder. Just barely manages to get his foot up there and hits the buzzer, completes the course. First one to do so of the night.
For a very early Palm, wonderful, crazy, amazing, healthy, beautiful run of the night.
Very beautiful.
Yeah, whatever that thing is called, which just signals to me, yeah, we didn't have any women this episode. Yeah. So we can do this really early.
So yes, great, great run from Travis Rosen. So glad that he is still competing. He's doing the thing that a lot of the Japanese competitors do in Sasuke, which is like threaten to retire every year.
Oh, yeah.
So hopefully he just continues to keep coming because I love watching him run the course. Next up is another montage. First, we have Kenneth Nimitalo, who goes out on the Big Dipper, and this was heartbreaking because this is the guy, they didn't mention it on the show because maybe they didn't want to show how heartbreaking it was, but this is the guy who had his daughter, Hazel, whose kidneys wouldn't work, and he trained in the hospital for, he lived and trained in the hospital for 11 months. He had done really, really well in the qualifying round. He's one of those guys that trains with Jeff Britton, but clearly just made a tiny mistake on the Big Dipper and goes out with no fanfare. Very unfortunate for Kenneth Nimitalo.
Yeah, this Big Dipper took out a lot of heavy hitters.
Yeah, remember, even with the net, it's the thing that took out, what's his name? Flip's friend.
I'm sorry.
JJ Woods.
This
is the one that took out JJ Woods in the qualifying round. So yeah, very, very tricky and temperamental obstacle.
And even worse than that is that we have to refer to JJ Woods as Flip's friend.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, I really do love him. I just, yeah, could not come up with that.
So next is Mike Chick. This is the ninja lawyer. What is it? Yeah, ninja lawyer, I think was his
nickname.
Yeah,
this is the guy who's gotten all of his clients off of death row, right?
Yes.
The DC lawyer.
Another guy that trains with Jeff Britton. This is the goofy guy. He likes magic tricks. He did some break dancing before the pipe fitter in the qualifying round. He makes it all the way to the floating monkey bars and does manage to qualify for Vegas.
Hooray.
Then we get Rico Rivera. Always colorful. And by colorful, I mean red. He's always red. And he goes out on the salmon
ladder. Guy?
Yes, the fire guy.
Oh, okay.
He goes out on the salmon ladder, unfortunately does not qualify for Vegas. He says he just got pumped out. So sucks for Rico.
Yeah. Get pumped up. Don't get pumped out.
Next up is Jojo Bynum, the 38-year-old software engineer. We come in right after he finishes the pipe fitter and he looks dead tired. He is exhausted. I don't know what happened to him in the first half of the course, but he is just
Who
gone.
Did this to you, Jojo? He's the second most famous JoJo on Monday Night Reality TV.
Who's, oh, is the first one the Bachelorette?
Yeah, they're on at the same time.
I knew that.
Yeah,
that.
There you go. I wish that we didn't come in halfway through his run because you're right. Like, maybe he just spent like so much time on the pipe fitter. Maybe he was one of those people.
Probably. And it's almost like one of, like, in those, like dumb, like stoner movies where like the big competition and like somebody like drugs the person before the competition, they have to like do it all drugged. It was like he was drugged.
Is this a trope?
Yeah, it's totally trope. Like, or like before the big fight and like they spike the gloves or something. I watched too many movies.
I don't think this happened in the Mighty Ducks.
No, that wasn't a stoner movie.
Wait, what stoner sports movies are there?
It's not necessarily, it doesn't have to be sport, just any competition, like the big race or whatever.
Like Greece, where that also doesn't happen. But
right. Well, right. Okay.
spent so too much time
yeah,
with this.
he's just totally out of it when he gets to the warped wall. He fails twice and you can see in his movements, he's just sluggish even getting up there despite the determination. And I was really thinking like, man, we might see JoJo fail at the warped wall here, but he barely manages to make it up, which was impressive in and of itself. But then he gets all the way up the salmon ladder, gets all the way through the monkey bars after that. Very, very impressive. Akbar said he's running on E.
He said he's on E. He didn't even say he's running on E.
Well, he said it multiple times in multiple different ways, I believe.
Well, he's running on E would make more sense because he means he's running on empty. But at one point he just yelled, he's on E, which in my generation means something else. So maybe you were right. Maybe someone Maybe someone did drug him. Yeah.
He was right. Akbar was the one that did it. He was like, I spiked him with E and he's still going.
What did this guy do to Akbar? Yeah. Well, first of all, I love when people get up the warp wall in the third try. I don't know why I like that so much. Yeah. It just fills me with hope. And he's also like weirdly good at the monkey bars. Like it's just something where like he's so gentle with placing them in and just like really doesn't have any struggles fumbling around trying to get it in there. So that was a well-suited obstacle for him, but it's amazing that he gets as far as he does.
Yeah, very calm and determined. And this, I really love this run because it really shows just like he did not want to give up, and pushing himself just that extra little bit is what got him to qualify, because I don't think he would have qualified had he not made it through those monkey bars because he had been so slow to those obstacles. And so he made it just far enough. He made it into the clacker. He made it all the way through half of it, I believe, and then goes out. But just like that, as Akbar said, like running on empty, he still manages to get it just far enough to qualify. And I thought that was really impressive.
Yeah. And after he falls on the clacker, he seems like weirdly upset, but maybe he was just, like,
I think he was
ready
just
to
gone.
Die. Yeah.
He, like the look on his face was just like dead eyes, like the soldier stare, like just like he was out of it.
Yeah.
Next, we have another montage. First was Mac Rush, the king of obstacles. He took off his crown, but went out at the monkey bars. Still good enough to qualify, though. So still pretty impressive for this guy. At his size, he does manage to qualify for Vegas.
This is this guy's move. Didn't he also get montaged and qualify the last time?
No, he ran the whole thing, I believe. He ran it, didn't he? Yeah, he had a whole package.
Well.
Remember, this is the guy who, like, he can bench a certain amount. He can, like, do a 50-yard, okay, here it is. He's 220 pounds. He can do 30 straight pull-ups, 45-second 40-yard dash. He called the other athletes cardio freaks and lightweight.
Well, it's gone for me.
And he ran with a crown. Okay.
Completely gone. I remember the crown. He was like,
I'm going to crush this course. That's why they haven't had me on, because they didn't want me to crush this course. Very confident.
I do remember that. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Okay. And so
this is why they pay you big bucks and not me. I show up.
Well, he does manage to qualify, so good for Mac Rush. I'm excited to see what he can do in Vegas. Then we got the second half of the Brazzi Bros, Alexio Gomez. Weird that we didn't get a package for him and he got montaged when he's the one that qualifies and his brother does not.
Well, they got a package together.
That's true.
It just happened to go before Lucas's, because it would have been weird if they played the package between them.
He also goes out at the monkey bars, but does manage to qualify for Vegas. So proving that he is the more athletic of the brothers.
Still way less married and slightly less handsome.
Well, we'll see. We'll see who's ultimately the winner between the brothers. Next up is Brett Sims, who for the first time in American Ninja Warrior history, I believe, gets a package. And I'm just like, what?
And it's like very not about him at all.
Like Brett Sims gets a package. Where is this coming from? And where are his American flag shorts? Because he really needs them.
Well, this is very like, we don't have any women tonight, but look, women compete in American Ninja Warrior. Here's one.
Brett Sims, the 29-year-old parkour instructor, he has been with American Ninja Warrior basically since the beginning. He was on America. I mentioned him in the previous podcast about Atlanta, is talking about how he cleared. He was from the American Ninja Challenge. He has competed in Sasuke, despite the fact that he has not competed in Vegas. Very, very old school. So when Akbar said he's OG, he is OG. Akbar said he is OG. That is original gangster right there.
Which is weird because he looks like he's 20.
Well, I mean, he was always like the young kid, but now he's 29. So yeah, time has passed with Brett Sims, but very happy to see him do well here. As I mentioned, he competed, 6 times, but never made it to Vegas. But this time he's married, newly married, and he married Grace Jones, who is now Grace Jones Sims. Grace Jones is, one of the women who competed on Team Ninja Warrior. And if you remember, this is some detective work. Last time when I was talking about Neil Craver, I was saying, you know, he's got a new girlfriend. Last time there was a different girlfriend. You know who that girlfriend was?
Was it Grace Jones?
It was Grace Jones.
Wow. And they're at the same finals yes. course here together. I wonder if it's awkward.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess they were like, the show doesn't want to focus on that because Brett and Casey is already enough.
I guess so.
Ninja drama.
I mean, congratulations to Brett Sims and Grace Jones. But I had to do detective work to figure this out. Like, she was with Neil last year.
Yeah, that's good journalism. You're like Kim Kardashian.
yeah.
That reference will already be dated in a week. It's weird too because they say that they met at a ninja gym, but it seems like they would have just met like. Unless they were talking about the course as a ninja gym or like Team Ninja Warrior or something. It seems like they would have met just like through the show, right?
I'd imagine. And apparently he shares a house with Ryan Stratus. Who knew that?
Not I.
so, yeah, I mean, this guy, he does the rounds. So, I mean, it would have been surprising if they hadn't met at some point.
Right, exactly. Because I was like, oh, I'm just going to start hanging out at ninja gyms to get a boyfriend. Although that's kind of a convoluted plan because I would have to find a way to pretend like I could do any of the obstacles like long enough to stay there because it would be weird if I was just like standing there.
Well, you just train.
I'll just jump in that like big thing of like foam blocks that it seemed like they were in.
Foam blocks are awesome.
Apparently that's a prerequisite for a ninja gym.
Prerequisite for any gym.
Yeah. Anyway. We talked about that for a long time because there's not that much to say about his run. It was very, very smooth.
Yeah, he's very good on the monkey bar placement. He's very light. He's only 130 pounds, so he's really able to do those upper body obstacles well. He doesn't have a lot of weight to carry. He looks very, very strong. He looks the strongest we've seen on the clacker up to this point. He clearly has a ton of juice left. Has those perfect L's, as Akbar likes to say. And manages to finish the course. And this was a great moment for me, at least, you know, knowing Brett Sims from so long ago. I was so glad to see him succeed here. And I really hope he does well in Vegas.
Yeah, this was when I realized how much I love the invisible ladder because we didn't see anybody who got there fail there. But I think that if it was in like the middle of a course, people would have gassed out on the ladder. There's just something about like with any obstacle, there's a lot of mind over matter. But when you still have a bunch of obstacles in front of you, it's hard to put yourself through some like it's hard to push yourself through such extreme physical pain when you're like, well, there's still so much ahead of me. But with the invisible ladder, you know that if you just finish this, then you get to hit that buzzer and you get to guarantee yourself that spot. And it pushes people to do things that I don't think that they would be able to do in any other situation.
Yeah, it's a really good obstacle, especially for the finals, especially because it's kind of like low stakes in the sense that if they get there, they've probably already qualified anyway, mm-hmm. but also high stakes in the sense that like they want to push that buzzer and you get to see the look of determination on their face, the pain on their face, well-designed obstacle. Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
Next is Sean Richardson, the 32-year-old actor. We join him right as he gets up the warped wall. Not too much to say about him, at least on my end. You can see his hands slipping a bit on the clacker as he works his way through and he goes down on the clacker. He does qualify, though, so good for Sean. As I mentioned, not a whole lot to say here.
I have a few things to say. One okay. is that he got a college scholarship for acting, which is weird. I wonder where he went. How does he have time to train for Ninja Warrior on that? Because acting school is very intense, at least at my school. Also, this was when Akbar started saying clack on, clack off, like way too much, which like barely qualifies as a joke, but he says it like a million times. And finally, they both half-heartedly say sha-na-na when he goes out.
Which I didn't catch that.
Also doesn't really make sense. And it's really sad to hear Matt Eisman disappointedly be like, sha-na-na indeed.
Well, there you go. There's Sean Richardson. Next up, another one of your favorites, Caleb Watson, the 35-year-old dairy farmer.
Hey, I said I liked his t-shirt last time.
Not
the execution, but I like the concept.
Well, that's his mountain.
Yes. I like well-placed Bible references. No, I don't know.
Well, in his package, he talks about taking the handles off of his bucket so he has to carry them with his fingers, which I thought was actually kind of clever to train your grip strength. But as he runs this course, he goes out on the Big Dipper. Clearly, technique was an issue here. He just doesn't know how to do this obstacle properly. And without the cargo net, he falls right into the water. Very early finish for one of the fastest times of the qualifying course.
Yeah, and for someone who has built up all night, like this was someone that was getting, you know, coming up like the entire episode. And so for people who are, if I was a fan of his, I would have been very upset by this. Thankfully, I do not have strong feelings about Caleb Watson. He's like Mike Holloway, right? Like, am I the only one who sees
that? Yeah, very Mike Holloway-esque.
Just making sure.
I think we talked about that last time, actually.
Clearly, yeah. I don't remember anything from.
I was kind of expecting this, to be honest, just because he did get. I mean, he was very impressive and strong in the qualifying run, but as I mentioned, his technique was not very good. So I was kind of thinking it might have been kind of a fluke that he managed to get through that first one so easily, and it really panned out that way that he went down here on the Big Dipper. And you know, there goes Caleb Watson. Next,
R.I.P.
Next is another montage. This is our final montage of the night. We get Neil Craver, Crazy Craver. He gets montaged, which I think is kind of weird because I think he's typically like one of their favorites because he's so goofy and crazy.
His package would have been exactly the same though.
Yeah.
Unless it was him being like, I'm so sad my ex-girlfriend just got married.
Yeah, there's only room for one like fully featured person between Neil and Brett, I guess.
Yeah, maybe the package was made when he was still dating Grace Jones and it would have been super awkward.
Well, he falls at the floating monkey bars, but does still qualify for Vegas. And then we also got Chris Bohm, the Ginger Ninja, clearly doesn't know Greg from Big Brother Canada 3.
Nor do I.
#604 proper. And stealing all Greg's thunder. He also falls at the monkey bars, but does again also qualify for Vegas.
Not for nothing, Neil Craver does have a very cute girlfriend also.
And Neil Craver himself, very cute guy.
Sure.
Saying it, calling it right here. all right, now we have the stars of the night, James McGrath and Drew Dreschel. First up is James McGrath, the 29-year-old personal trainer. Okay, so last time, I'm pretty sure I brought up his hair.
I thought about this interaction also.
Go ahead. You were like, what are you talking about? I've never noticed his hair. And this time we got a package about his hair. This episode made me feel so vindicated between the gum and the hair. I was just like, I am so on point.
Yeah, this episode just made me look really unobservant. So I was like, what are you talking about? About like literally everything. Yeah, well, this package was weird and fun.
Yeah, it was about, you know.
Which is the story of this episode. Honestly, we didn't get very many like serious packages.
Yeah, no, not at all, actually.
I didn't cry one time this whole episode, which is the first time I can say that, just saying.
There you go. So he wanted to grow out his hair, but it kept getting in his face. So Casey Catanzaro braided it for him, and it made it so aerodynamic.
Yeah, it looks terrible, the braids. His hair is really nice.
Crush his dreams.
No. His haircut, like when it's not braided, is great. I think that it looks really, really nice. He's like a very good looking guy. So I think the hair really suits him. But I don't think he's going for style with the braids. He's talking about going for functionality. So it's okay for me to say that it doesn't look great. I think the white guy with cornrows thing, you know, it's hard to pull off. Very James Franco from Spring Breakers. But yeah, I mean, I am glad that Casey was able to do that for him because I don't want him to cut his hair because I think his hair looks great grown out.
There you go.
So I have to say on the matter.
He's super tall. So when he gets to the pipe fitter, he is able to, despite the fact that they don't swing like they did before, he's able to get all the way to the end of the first pipe without releasing his feet, which is just really, really great for his time and conserving energy. He gets through that pipe fitter very, very quickly. Speeds straight up the salmon ladder. Really, really efficient, really great. Akbar says he's got magical hands, the hands that rock the cradle. He rocked it. He rocked the cradle.
Ew.
Yeah, like what?
Yeah, no, that's gross.
What's he saying
like
there?
Like, wait, did he say that on the salmon ladder?
I think he said it on the monkey bars.
Yeah, that makes more sense. It's kind of like they are the little thing where you place the bars. It's like a cradle.
It's a cradle. That's what I've been looking for this whole time. I've been saying like holder thingies. I could have called them cradles.
Yeah,
Akbar,
I've been calling them rungs, which is not accurate because they're the thing where the rung goes. But anyway, yeah, he looks like
those cradles.
Yeah, he did. And he looks like he didn't even break a sweat. Like yeah. He really just looks like this is no problem for him at all. Also, Joe Moravsky holding a giant sign that says Just Beast It is adorable.
Super adorable. I love Joe.
Yeah, that's the camaraderie that we talk about loving so much. Just that you don't, you see the competitors cheering for each other. You don't often see them holding the signs. So I really liked that.
Yeah, and he's another one. He made it to the clacker and clearly had tons of juice left. He was just pumping through those like super fast and flies up the invisible ladder very, very quickly. Fastest time by far, by almost 2 minutes. Very, very impressive by James McGrath. So much so that I'm getting nervous now for Drew. I was like, we just saw a really impressive run. Are we going to see two in a row? Is that how this works?
Oh, I see. I thought you were getting nervous about him not being the fastest. And I was like, I don't care about that.
Well, so next up was Drew Dreschel, the 27-year-old gym owner. And we get this package where he's putting a ton of pressure on himself. Like, if I don't do well this season, then my life is ruined.
They'll kill my dog. They'll close my gym. It was very dramatic.
Yeah. And like he had like the testimonials, like James saying, like, if anybody's going to do it, I think Drew's going to do it. And so I was like, oh, this is starting to get me a little nervous. Like, I don't want to see him make a small mistake. And then we see that the Brazzy bro that got the package is on the bubble. So I'm like, why would they give him the package and not his brother if he doesn't make it? Like,
we talked about this. It was a double package.
I was so nervous.
Wow, that did not even cross my mind. I was thinking just about like how kind of like I understand the pressure, like now that he owns a gym and stuff like that, but I just can't imagine that his whole livelihood would just immediately crumple if he didn't make it to Las Vegas. I think his gym is probably going to be okay, even if he didn't do well here.
Well, I think he's going to like win Sasuke 34, so he'll be fine.
So you'll go to his gym. Where is the gym? Are they? They're kind of in
he's
your
in
area,
Connecticut. Yeah,
that's the same thing as Massachusetts to me, functionally.
I wish I could go to Drew Dreschel's gym. That would be pretty cool. So yes, I was nervous, but you know, I was like, where is he going to get tripped up? There's not a lot of places that it could happen. I was like, maybe the Big Dipper, but he flies right through the Big Dipper. No problems. No problem on block run. Gets straight through the pipe fitter. Then I was like, the only thing I see him failing on now is maybe the salmon ladder, but I don't think he's failed in the salmon ladder almost ever. So yeah. I was just like, all right, he must make it now. And he does. He goes straight up the salmon ladder. And also on the spin cycle, straight through 1, 2, 3, best we've seen on the spin cycle. But he makes it up the salmon ladder. He is the one. Finally, the very last run of the night, he is perfect on the monkey bars. Doesn't miss
yes.
a single time. Straight through him.
Yes.
Of course, Drew Dreschel is going to be the only one.
This is so vindicating for our winner pick, our collective next American Ninja Warrior pick.
Yeah. He also gets straight through the clacker without any misfires. It just gets all the way through it.
Yeah. I wish that they didn't have a camera so close on Lucas Gomez, like the second that Drew Dreschel qualified, because it was so sad. That was the closest I got to crying the whole night. Just like his whole body, he just like crumples. But I mean, you're in the situation where your only hope is that Drew Dreschel fails. Like, he had to know.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, Drew, he takes a lot of time before the invisible ladder. Ultimately, that costs him the fastest time by just about 4 seconds. But he does get up that invisible ladder very quickly. Very impressive. So happy to see Drew do so well. It's and then in the interview afterward, like he was very serious. It seems like this, he had his game face on.
Yes, this was a very different Drew. He's very confident. He's saying, like, you know, you haven't even seen what I can do yet. And I was like, wow.
this is like this got scary. He was like,
Drew Breaking Bad.
Yes. I am the one that knocks, Drew Dreschel.
Yeah, he is the one that salmon ladders, that clacks. He is the one that clacks on the clacker. Yeah. Yeah, I think that if he had really cared about being the fastest time, he definitely could have done it. But it's fun to see the rivalry between him and James, because Drew had the fastest time in qualifying and now James had the fastest time here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we love him. Don't get me wrong. Talking about how serious his video package is.
He's just ready. He's ready for Vegas. Yes. He's ready to take down this course.
Yeah. Game face.
And that's our episode. We end with Drew, which obviously is a highlight. What did you think overall?
I was not a big fan of this episode, to be honest. I think I liked the course. I thought it was a fair course. There were no women, which is always, you know, an issue for me. And also just, you know, in terms of like the big name, the top names on the marquee, I just feel like I know that Drew and James are going to finish. You know, it's really fun to watch them run, but it's not the type of thing where I'm on the edge of my seat. So I really wasn't, I didn't feel nervous. I didn't feel super excited. I wasn't jumping out of my seat at any point during this episode. We didn't really get a big array of packages. It was just, you know, a lot of fun, maybe a little silly, like a couple sort of sad things, but nothing incredibly moving or incredibly funny. So this was a very middle of the road episode for me. How about you?
I loved it. I liked this episode a lot.
Okay.
Well. this is my kind of episode. I liked the course. I liked the athletes. I was out of my seat, you know, watching Travis Rosen, watching Brett Sims. I was super pumped for them. Always happy to watch James and Drew. And yeah, I liked this episode. I liked the fact that it seemed more about the course and more about, you know, just seeing how far these athletes can go than the packages. The packages didn't seem like they got in the way of the athletes running. So yeah, I liked this episode, and I've liked, you know, both of the finals episodes so far. I'm excited for the next one. We get to watch the Wolfpack take on the course. Should be a lot of fun.
And you know who's not going to be there? Any race car drivers. And I am so excited.
Just you wait. Just like we got Harry Potter the second time, like, watch Danica Patrick still be there.
Yeah, they let her go straight to the qualifying course. Honestly, they would. Or straight to the finals course.
What are we just might still get like another interview.
Oh, sideline interviews. Yeah. Great. She's just going to be Christine for the night.
Yes. So there we go. That is our episode. We will be talking about the Wolfpack next week. Hopefully we'll have a special guest for you, but stay tuned for that. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to us on iTunes. We are American Ninja Warrior Rehap Ups on iTunes. That is the dedicated feed. You can also subscribe to the Reality TV Rehap Ups to get all of the wonderful Reality TV Rehap Up podcasts, like the Reality TV Rehappy Hour and the Bachelorette podcast and all of those wonderful shows. If you like Matt Eisman, then you should check out Big Brother, because he's a big fan of Big Brother. And if you like Big Brother, you should check out the Reality TV Rehappy Hour.
I like how you don't say if you're a big fan of you, just if you're a big fan of Matt Eisman, because clearly that's why people are listening to this podcast, because they obviously love Matt Eisman.
Big Matt Eisman fans all around. So yeah, you can check me out on the Rehappy Hour, and also obviously on the main feed talking about Big Brother. Interesting season of Big Brother so far. We have a lot of fun talking about it. So thank you again for listening. Yeah, Lita's watching. She can do a fantastic Nicole impression.
Oh yeah, I'm not going to do it now because no one cares. But I will do it if I ever get. If I ever get the opportunity.
I gave you a shout out on the Reality TV or Happy Hour for your Nicole impression last night.
I will listen to that on my commute tomorrow.
So yes, thank you for joining us. Follow us on Twitter. I am at Armstrong Taryn, not Taryn Armstrong. And Lita is at Lita Tweeted, not at News AF _intern.
I am still the News AF intern, though, to be clear.
Yeah, she hasn't retired.
I have not abdicated. Yes, Lita tweeted. I still tweet, but, you know, I also tweeted.
Yes, and that's L-I-T-A, Lita tweeted. We love hearing from you guys. We love responding to you guys, talking about Ninja Warrior. It's all fun. Let's do, what was the hashtag? Redneck, what was it? Redneck Dancer.
I'm not going to tell you because I don't want it to be that.
Please tweet us with the hashtag Redneck Dancer.
And leave
specifically
us,
Alita.
Leave us reviews on iTunes because it's really sad for me to obsessively refresh those if there's nothing new there.
Yes, we've gotten some great reviews on iTunes. I think there's like a good 10 of you or something.
Yeah, but they're all glowing and we love to see them.
Yes, let me read one right now. This is one of my favorite reviews from Cuddly Caucasian. This is the most American podcast I ever ninja'd up top! Exclamation marks. Five ninjas out of America.
Yeah, so that's the kind of thing we like to hear. So follow that formula. Exactly.
Yeah, so thank you, Cuddly Caucasian, for the wonderful, wonderful review. If you want your review read on this podcast, give us one. And again, thank you for joining us. We will see you next time.